Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune is with us once again to answer some of your parenting questions.
Afternoon, Sean.
My nearly 15-year-old nephew has noticed some of his primary school friend group now forming different groups in secondary school. There's now a so-called cool gang and a nerdy gang. He's nerdy, but also desperately trying to be amiable to both gangs. He is noticing the distance and feeling hurt by the increasing isolation when they all arrange an activity but leave him out. As he sees it on group chats and realises he hasn't been invited. He used to be proud of his good school notes from teachers written in his journal to his parents. Now he doesn't reveal them, like it's uncool and nothing to be proud of. I understand the teen pack mentality and how they can be so cruel, but how would you advise he deal with this isolation and navigate this period?
I mean, it's tough, but Sean, that also sounds really typical adolescent development stuff. And it can even happen earlier than this 15-year-old stage, but it is around here. Peer group interactions change because kids are developing in very different ways in adolescence and at different paces. And I think this is evident here.
Yeah.
You know, that adolescence is a time of identity reformation. They're rediscovering, who am I, who am I like, what am I postulating like, you know, how do I want to be perceived by my peer group? Couldn't give a hoot how my family are perceiving me. It's all about the peer group. So kids change, they experiment with new tastes, new designs, new music, new friends, all of that, because they're reestablishing, I'm other than the child I once was, I'm my own person. And you see a whole lot of that. You also see that increased emphasis in being accepted by a peer group above all else. That's now their important hub of social emotional development.
Yeah.
And because of that, friendship changes are unavoidable. Things do not stay the same, much as we might want them to, nor should they stay the same.
Yeah.
They are supposed to change, but it doesn't mean it's not incredibly painful for the kids who are like, well, I haven't changed. You know, why hasn't everything stayed the same? I'm the same. But of course he's not, because this aunt or uncle, whoever wrote into us, is still outlining how he's not showing those notes from the teacher at home anymore. So he's also changing.
Yeah.
And again, that is very developmentally appropriate. And, you know, your younger child bringing you home a note from the teacher saying they're great, they're delighted with themselves, and they're probably going to get some kind of incentive for doing so. A teenager wants to downplay that, because whatever you do, don't put a spotlight on me. I just want to blend in.
Yeah.
I don't want to stand out. So there is a whole lot going on. I think what could help him is to provide some context for this, you know, so that he's understanding there's nothing wrong with you. People change, friends change, people like to hang out with different people. It's not easy, it's not nice, but there's nothing wrong with you that this is happening. And I think listening to him with acceptance and empathy and avoiding trying to fix this. This is not something to be fixed.
Yeah.
So as the grown-ups, almost like you want to sit on your hands, bite your tongue, and just don't get pulled into the, let me talk to somebody about this and sort this out for you, because it doesn't help. You cannot and should not try to fix this. Be more interested in the kids he still has a connection with. Like, really ask about them, be excited about them, be interested in what they're doing. Did you see them? Did you hang out? And become overtly less interested in the kids who are moving away. Let them move away.
Yeah.
And really emphasize, by doing rather than instructing him, and you being interested in the other kids, you're also reminding him that's where the interest lies. And to go with that. So focus really, what I'm saying, on reinforcing his sense of self, that he's exactly who he's supposed to be. He's a great kid. You all love him, and he has friends. The friendship group is changing.
Yeah.
But that's nothing to do with him. That's just the way things go. And reminding him as adults that this is something that happens at various times in your life. But he has friends, and it sounds like he has friends.
Mm.
And he's a kid who seems to be able to socially engage, because he's desperately trying to be amiable to both groups. You know, a little bit of a middle guy going, I can be friends with you and you. And, you know, God love him, he's going to learn that, yeah, he can be friendly, and he should be encouraged to be friendly with everybody. But he won't be friends with everyone.
Yeah, there may be a danger in that he's in the nerdy gang, but he doesn't really want to be in the nerdy gang.
He wants
to be in the cool gang.
And
he might reject the nerdy gang, and the cool gang aren't going to accept him, and then he might end up with
something. Think that's why the grown-ups around him really need to get very interested in his nerdy pals, because, and celebrating that, and celebrating who they are, and that it's cool to be them. You know, this whole idea of the cool, like, who gets to decide that?
And
you know, always emphasizing that once you've got people who like hanging out with you and that you like being with, those are your people. They're your friends.
Yeah.
You know, if it's hard work and you are having to change who you are to get accepted by another group, they are not your friends.
Yeah. It's a funny thing that there seems to be a certain age.
Oh, yeah.
And it happens to all of us. But the idea of hierarchies kick in.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, oh, they're the alpha people.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's phraseology that's used a lot.
No, it is. And especially when, you know, when we say somebody's cool, we often mean they're dominant.
Yeah.
You know, and cool is just like a little euphemism for that. But we mean they're dominant. And they might be dominant because they have a certain skill set. Maybe they're really good at sports or they're a really good speaker in class and they're well able to speak up and out for themselves. Or maybe they're a bit mean and others are a little bit afraid of them, and that affords them a position of power. And I think it is always worth exploring with our kids. Are they really cool or are they a bit mean, and it's easier be with them than against them? Because that's not real friendship either, and that's not somebody you want to be around, and you wouldn't want people thinking of you like that.
Yeah. Can you give me some advice on co-parenting? My five-year-old knows that his parents are no longer together. I have tried to outline a schedule of when my ex and I take care of our son, but Dad doesn't want to stick to his set days and wants to see our son as much as possible. I can understand that it's a massive change not seeing him all the time, but him dipping in and out daily causes a lot of confusion for me and my son. I think better boundaries are needed to make things easier for everyone, but I'm not sure how to go about this. I just want this transition to be as smooth as possible for all involved. I would appreciate any advice.
This just sounds really recent and raw.
It does, yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I really feel, and there's something in, you know, it's causing a lot of confusion for me and my son, that just for me feels like, oh, this is very fresh. I think, you know, if the arrangement cannot be agreed between you, and I'm not saying it can't with this, it may be just that this is very early in the process and it's hard to get agreement, but if you cannot, attending with a qualified mediator could be very helpful.
Yeah.
Because it's going to provide this safe, neutral space that is boundaried, picking up on the word boundaries in this letter, and somebody is going to stop the situation getting out of control and ensuring both of you are heard. And that can be very valuable. Now, we don't know the specifics of this separation, but where, how, and as much as possible, without either parent sacrificing their own well-being, if you know what I mean, keep the access with your son open, fluid and flexible as possible.
Yes.
Because it is in his best interests.
Absolutely.
And that is the minimum amount of upheaval for him. But I'm qualifying that with, you have to ensure that you're taking care of and centering your own well-being as well, because your child is going to rely much more on having two emotionally healthy parents than an access arrangement that's open and fluid, but you're both on edge all the time during it.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to work. But I just think, so without knowing the specifics, center your own well-being, but as much as possible, do keep it really relaxed for your son. And that doesn't mean that your ex-partner has a key to let themselves in or out of your home or you into their home, but that there is enough that, sure, you can pop over once a day. This is a time that works for us after school, for homework or before bed or something like that. But, you know, Sean, this just is feeling very recent and raw. So go gently and go carefully at this stage would be the best thing I could say. And emphasizing again, link with a mediator. I think it would be really helpful.
Yeah. And if they do link with the mediator, is it, you know, it's worth bringing into that conversation, or is it that it's not about weaponizing the child or access to the child, but that the person who wrote into us is having difficulty perhaps with the ex-partner rocking up and
100%. And that is how this sounds, you know, because I think it is clear that this parent who's writing into us does want the minimum amount of upheaval for the child. So I don't think it's about weaponizing.
But for themselves as well.
But for themselves. And that is important. Like, it's easy to sit here and say, no, it's all about the children. Put the children Children need their grown-ups to be okay as well.
Yes,
So if you write yourself and your needs out of this scenario, then actually that isn't in your child's best interests. Having you happy and well and balanced, that is in their interests. So I think we have to put ourselves in these kinds of conversations. So I just think always avoid weaponizing children and weaponizing access. Access with parents should not be weaponized. It can end up being so, but often it's linked to other emotional strains between parents. If those can be worked out, and I do think it's okay to say, look, I need to know who's going to be in and out of my home during the week and when. Mm. That's a very reasonable statement.
Yeah, yeah, of course. In relation to the first question there about the cool gang and the nerdy gang, someone says I could have written that question about my 13-year-old son. Another person says, I teach third and fourth class. Changing friendship groups happen a lot at that age as
well. It does. Spot on. There's 2 points. It's that kind of 13 to 15 and it's 7 to 9. So it's exactly that age. By 9, you do see a lot of changes in friendship groups.
Oh, God. So there's kind of two
periods
of heartbreak.
And you can see in that, whoever wrote in teaching third or fourth class could probably write a book about this. But I mean, some of them come back from the summer break and they think they're 16.
Yes.
And the rest of them are still very much 6. So of course there's going to be changes and a bit of sass and a bit of attitude creeping in, and they're trying out things and pushing boundaries, testing limits. So that comes into sharp refocus by 14 as well.
Yeah, I don't think we call it sass at 14.
No.
I don't know what you'd call it.
Maybe for the radio we will though.
Yeah. I feel like my husband has a favourite child and it's impacting the dynamic between my children. We've 2 sons, both polar opposites. One is really into sports, the other is into music and the arts. It's very clear to me that my husband favours the younger, sporty one. And since he's been old enough for them to share this interest, my eldest gets less of a look in. My eldest is now getting to the stage where he's able to process this a bit more. And I can see it slowly turning, resenting his father. My husband just thinks he's cheeky, but I think it's deeper than that and that he's hurt by his clear favouritism. I've approached my husband about his approach and he claims he loves them both equally. I've no doubt that he loves them both, but his expression of this is definitely less for my eldest. What's the best way to approach this situation?
I'm going to look, being interested and sharing interest and love are very different things. And I think he probably does love them both equally. Mm. So this isn't about how he expresses love, but he clearly relates to one more than the other.
He
clearly enjoys one more than the other. That might be an uncomfortable truth for a parent to kind of say, well, look, fair enough, that is true. But that's certainly what's being described here, is that you relate more to one over the other, you enjoy one more over the other. That will certainly drive a disconnect between this dad and his oldest son. I mean, that's also a fact.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean he doesn't love him.
Yes.
And that's really important that you don't get pulled in. Of course, I love him. It's not about that. Our job as parents is to be interested in what interests our kids, so that we teach them they are interesting.
Mm.
And if we are authentically now, I mean, I know there's only so much interest you can have in Minecraft before you're gone. I've run out of interest and all of that. But if you can be interested in what's exciting to them and what lights them up, you're really reinforcing that passion in them and that they're somebody that has a voice and, you know, should be heard and paid attention to. It's really good for self-esteem and for confidence. And it also then strengthens the connection. And when we have a good, strong connection in our relationships, it's much easier to correct behavior, to problem solve behavior, because it's easier to correct within connection, if that all makes sense. But it often means that we will have to become fluent in something, as I said, like Minecraft or Pokemon, or an activity that really isn't our interest because our kids are our interest.
Yeah.
So this dad is connected with the second boy because they share an interest, but that is kind of making it about dad, when actually it needs to be about the boys.
Yes, right.
And,
yes.
You know, when you do share an interest, by the way, equally the first boy is into music. If the parent was into music, and it's definitely easier when you really share the interest. But find something in his wheel that you really are saying, OK, let's talk about that. And if not, begin to become interested. Let him teach you about the things that excite him and that light him up. So I do think this is on dad to step up, but it doesn't mean he doesn't love the boys equally.
Oh, no.
So I just don't go down that road.
Yeah. No, because I've no doubt he loves them both, she says.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's just easier. And even if he's kind of faking it a little bit with the other son.
Yeah.
Will the son be aware of that?
Well, he might be dubious, especially now going, I know you're not interested in this.
Yeah.
And it is, as a parent, say, well, it's brand new to me. I've never done it before and I don't know enough about it. So I'm definitely interested in finding out about it.
Mm.
And you can be genuine about that. So it doesn't have to be, no, I'm totally into it. I love how you love it. And that makes me interested in it.
Yes.
Is a really nice statement.
Yeah. My worst nightmare has come true and I've given birth to a penny-pinching monster. If someone were to ask me to name unwelcome traits in a person, the first on the list is being tight with money. It's a miserable quality for a person to have. I should also say there's a difference in being wise with money and being mean. I have 4 children. I brought them all up the same to be generous with those around them. But it seems my 3rd child missed the memo. She's now 17 and refuses to put her hand in her pocket whenever she can avoid it. I often wonder, is it because she has generous older siblings? But my youngest is 15 and would give you her last penny. I've tried to have conversations with my 17-year-old about it, but she remains the same. She still has her confirmation money. Any advice to kick this behaviour? Now, I don't know if she literally still has confirmation money.
I was going to say
it's possible if you're only 17.
I was actually kind of impressed if she does. I know that's a phrase often used to describe someone who's miserly. And I agree, there is a difference between being wise and being miserly with money. And the latter is not an attractive trait. But I wonder, is there, with a 17-year-old in particular, a different way to approach this? First of all, is she saving for something? Because at 17, does she have this fantasy, I'm going to buy a car, I'm going to insure a car? You know, what is she saving every penny she gets, and therefore, you know, like a little squirrel stockpiling, you know, is she hoarding it with a bigger goal in mind that she maybe hasn't shared with you? And also, when it comes to teenagers and money, and I'm always, is it the money you give her? Is it the money she earns? You know, what do we expect them to do with their money? Do they cover personal items, makeup, phone? You know, what is it you expect her to do with her money? And it nights out with friends or parties or gifts for friends? Like, what is she to cover? And if the answer is no, she doesn't have to cover any of those, then I'd revisit that. And I would make sure she is having to cover some of those with money, because it's going to teach her about the value of money and that it comes into your life and out. I think if that's what we could do, is that we raise kids to know that the importance of having money to flow freely in and out of your life, that you don't just hoard it and stockpile it, because it develops a really unhealthy relationship with money one way or the other. I would avoid labeling her as miserly, especially to her face, by the way.
Yeah.
I think instead, if you get curious about what matters to her and how she understands and relates to money, that would be much more helpful. And it might be linked to finding a cause that she's really passionate about and maybe compassionate about, and encouraging her to donate and set up a standing order, and that she sees the value in giving money to others and helping others. And it's coming up to a time of year that can be encouraging for children, you know, to buy gifts for others. They certainly don't have to be, nor should they be, big things.
Yeah.
You can give gifts in kind, you can give experiences, but that she's giving back. You could structure it around coming up to Christmas. You're going to have to give something to everyone in your life. And again, it doesn't have to be money and it doesn't have to be stuff. It can be giving a service, a kindness. But there's something about opening her up to including others in what she's doing, I think would be holistically helpful.
Yeah. Then again, one person's miserliness is another person's being careful with money. The 17-year-old mightn't see it that way.
That's why I think you have to approach it with curiosity and not label her. We are all so generous and you're not, is othering her within the family.
Yeah.
And she's just going to go, fair enough. Yeah. I'm okay with that. And I'll be the one with a really deep pension while you all don't.
Yeah.
You know, but if she's very sensible and clever with money, don't let it be at a cost of kindness.
Yes.
And I think that's the balance you're going for. But always get curious and go, what is she saving for? I'm curious, at 17, might she have plans for her money?
Yeah, indeed. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank you.
As ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.